Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, March 8th, 2010. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, all you fellow small business owners out there, you know, we've been having some great shows lately, a lot of things, rounding things out, not just specifically about running a business and being successful and good using good marketing tactics. But last week our show featured a fitness expert because I think it's really important for us to remain as healthy as we can, because you can't run a thriving business if you're not healthy. So we're going to be continuing that series at least once a month. If you know a fitness expert that you'd like to invite to be on the show, feel free to email me, or best actually contact me through my Twitter page at Indie Business. Well, today we're going to tackle a topic that we haven't covered a lot on the show before, and I'm really excited about it. As small business owners, we have to not only wear most of the hats ourselves, but we also have to know how to delegate some of those hats. And not only do we need to delegate in particular ways with our leadership capabilities fully engaged. And to help us do that today, we've got author David Russo. His new book is called 17 Rules Successful Companies Use to Attract and Keep Top Talent. David Russo is the founder of Inno River Associates, and that's a business that consults on best practices and workforce strategies with companies of all sizes. He is a longtime member of the Society for Human Resource Management, the world's leading human resources professional association. He's worked with some of the most well-respected companies in the country, and he has a boatload of tips to share with us today. If you're listening at IndieBusinessRadio.com, be sure to click on the chat link so you can ask your questions, and we'll be sure to attack them here on the air. David Russo, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you, Donna Maria. Great to be here.
David, let's just start with, a question that a lot of small business owners have, and that is, you know, I'm running this business. How do I even know if I'm in a position to tackle the issue of hiring people or contracting out important work to other people to help my business grow?
Well, I think there are three factors that every small business owner or every business owner should know and be pretty comfortable with before they think about adding staff. And number one, and I think this is most important, are you missing out on business because it's all on you?
So are you, in other words, are you a bottleneck?
Well, yeah, or are you a bottleneck in certain ways, but also are you spread so thin that business is sort of falling off the edge of the table because you can't grasp at it? And the second thing would be, do I have all the requisite skills necessary to corral all the necessary parts of running a business and managing those parts well enough to be successful, profitable, and sustainable?
So, and that's a question you ask even before you've taken on new people. How is
Absolutely.
Everything running with me at the helm?
Yeah, exactly. Do I have enough arms and legs to do all this and be successful? Because, you know, there are three, you know, precepts for me about being a business. Number one is you want to be profitable, successful. You want to make a living, or even more than that. Number two, you want to be sustainable. You don't want to be here today and then blown out of the water tomorrow. You want to be around. And third, and I think this is a critical one a lot of people fail to remember, is that if you are profitable and sustainable, are you growing? Are you evolving? Because any business that stays static runs the risk of being attacked from the outside by people who are newer, more innovative, have different ideas. So you have to be viable and evolving. So those are three things I would recommend that people pay attention to. Once you've decided that you can't do any or all of those three things, then it's time to decide whether you need to not be the head of a business, or you need to add people, or either inside or contractors or temporary workers or consultants or whatever it might be, to be complementary to your business and supplementary to your business growth and development. That would be my advice.
Complementary and supplementary. Those are really good terms, and we're going to delve a little bit into those. But David, the first thing you mentioned, though, was to ask yourself if you're missing new business since it's all on you. What are some of the most obvious signs that you are, in fact, missing out on new business because you don't have help?
Well, assuming, and this is always dangerous, but assuming that you're in touch either with the Chamber of Commerce or business organizations within your community, small or large, if you see other people coming into your area of expertise and being successful immediately without apparent struggle, especially ones that are not funded better than you are or have some external support system that you don't have, but people who just sort of pop up and are successful, then you know that there was business for the taking out there and you didn't get it.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. You know, I thought you were going to say something like, well, if you're getting phone calls and there's orders you can't fill or whatever, that's an obvious sign. But you're saying, look at the market, look at the industry, and see if other people are chipping away at your heels?
Yeah, basically, if the market segment, let's take something mundane, like a hairstylist who runs a business. You know, if he or she is in a in an area within a city, and suddenly, because it's a one or two person shop, and suddenly other folks are springing up and being very, very successful, and being successful, not that you're less successful, but they are being successful, that means there is an opportunity to add to your business right in your own backyard that you were not able to take advantage of. Not that you were doing poorly, but either you weren't accessible to these people, or they didn't know about you, or you weren't marketing yourself, you know, you're creating visibility. Because of your reputation, I mean, your repeat customers and the, you know, the people who are your regular clients are coming over and over and over again, it's not that you're doing something wrong, it's just that you're not doing something right. And that might be an indication that you need to expand, add staff to grasp hold and sort of dominate your market segment in your geographic area. That's an example, Donna Maria.
Those are some excellent points. And you talked about complementing and supplementing. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, yeah. If you have a skill, for example, bookkeeping is a skill, but you're not an accountant and you need accounting help, taking on the accounting side of that two-edged sword of accounting and bookkeeping could be dangerous. So you need somebody with complementary skills, somebody whose skills are accounting that complements your ability to keep the books. However, if marketing is a skill you don't have any, you don't know how to do it, and so you're sort of flying by the seat of your pants, if you will, then you need a skill set, a talent that has marketing to supplement what you're doing. So the difference is, one is complementary is uplifting, supplementary is adding on, adding something new. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. That's really good advice. And so what are some of the things that we look for in ourselves when we're considering taking on the responsibility of hiring someone or even a contractor? Or maybe we have different skills if we depending on whether we want to actually hire an employee or take on someone as a vendor or a contractor. What are some of the things that we need to have in place personally in order to do that in the best way possible?
Well, the first thing is, are you interested in managing people or managing results? Many people make the mistake of hiring people when they really don't want to have the relationships. There are personal and they're integrated relationships with people that managing people requires. And those people shouldn't hire people. They should hire results. They should hire somebody with a requisite skill set to add the tools or the maybe the salt or the pepper into the stew that will make the business much better. Let's go back to the hairdresser, right? Rather than, if managing people is not a strength, something you're not interested in, rather than hiring hairdressers, why not hire independent contractors and rent your chairs to them so that they can operate independently? And if they produce results, you gain, there's gain sharing because, you know, you get some of the financial gains of their success. And if they don't, you sever the agreement with them and fill the chair with another individual with those skill sets. And you never have to really manage the people. You don't have to worry about their comings and goings. It's all based on results. If they come in, do their work, establish a clientele, and you are able to generate income for your business through their skills and their results, that's great. If they don't, you don't have to worry about all of the aspects of employment. That's an example I would use, Donna.
Good point. Now, what if you're a business and you maybe want to take on a virtual assistant, for example, which is something that small business owners really use a lot, and those people don't have to be located anywhere near you. You both have computers and you can communicate that way. What are some of the things to consider in terms of those personal relationships? Because I'm just thinking about how, you know, in today's connected world, even though someone is not with you, it's nice to be able to maybe not interact with that person in the close management way that you would if they were on your staff and you saw them every day, but still to be able to create a rapport with them that goes beyond just managing their results.
Well, creating a rapport with a virtual assistant is, to my way of thinking, is a matter of setting the expectations of what that would be at the outset. And okay. What I mean by that is the business owner, in searching for a virtual assistant, in every discussion, be it online, telephone, face-to-face, needs to say, here's how I run my business. Here are my expectations of a relationship. Here's how I operate. This is what I expect. And then, and which most people miss, is to say to the virtual assistant, and here now is what you can expect from me. I will do this, 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 and thus. And then the conversation, again, whether it's online, or needs to proceed, and what do you expect? How do you operate so that there's a keen and refined understanding of what the relationship is supposed to be like before one ever starts? That builds rapport because, especially in arm's-length relationships, surprises cannot be explained away because you can't look in someone's eye and say, well, I really didn't mean how that sounded, how it felt, how it looked, etc. Am I making sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So setting expectations at the outset. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Donna Marie, it's no different than doing it in a face-to-face relationship for somebody you're hiring. Remember, whether they're virtual assistants, whether they're contractors, or whether they're employees, they're people, and people all bring the same human nature to every interaction.
David, one of the things your book does very eloquently is kind of set forth a little bit of a, like the history of quote-unquote labor relations or employee relations in this country, and I know we don't, hopefully anyway, we don't need to become experts in that area, but what are some of the things that you think are important for us to know about the evolution of the process of engaging people to help your business grow that's important for us to know in this country, particularly as we live through this recessionary time?
Well, I think what has been lost and really needs to be regained and will be regained eventually as we struggle is that, you know, most people, especially people who are psychologically sound, really want to make a contribution. So no one wants to come to work with you, for you, or alongside you, and do badly. And I don't mean do badly financially. I mean do badly in their performance. Everybody wants to do well because it says a lot about them. Mm-hmm. I think there's a natural tendency in management to think that employees, associates, even friends who you do business with have to be prodded and pushed. And I don't believe that's it at all. The best people are having the most fun when they're working hard and being successful, okay? Because there is, I think, a natural high, if you will, almost like the athlete's high, that people get when something they have done is praised, rewarded, recognized as of high quality. So people naturally want to do that. So in looking for people, I tell my clients, it's great to know that the resume, that the skill set is all in place, but look for the light behind the eyes. You know, is there a glitter there? Are people genuinely interested in what you have to say about your business? Have they learned enough about your business to be able to come into the relationship with a feel for what it is and how it operates and what makes it go? People who have that natural curiosity and have the lights going and get early on engaged are so much more likely to succeed and make you succeed. People who are there for the job, people who are there for the benefits, people who are there for the pay, they're folks that at the first time, sign of a struggle, whether it's your financial struggle or their performance struggle, will bail on you and be gone because they were never really with you at all. Okay? And that's something that a lot of managers make the mistake. I believe that one person who cares about your business and wants it to succeed is worth 2.5 people who are, even if they're just as skilled, 2.5 people who are just there because they're filling the space and doing the job, even if they're doing a good job. Because the person who is engaged, who cares, when the nickel stands on edge, will push it over on to your side, will push it over on the employer's side, because they want the company to succeed. They want the organization to succeed. They even want you to succeed, you know.
And I great think advice today from David Russo, author of 17 Rules Successful Companies Use to Attract and Keep Top Talent. If you have any questions for David, make sure you ask them in our chat room. We're going to come back after just a short commercial break. This is Indie Business Radio. Don't touch that mouse.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking with David Russo today. He's the author of 17 Rules Successful Companies Use to Attract and Keep Top Talent. David, over the last couple of months, I've read a lot of newspaper articles and statistics indicating that the vast majority of employees or people who are employed in this country are unhappy. Do you have any insights into why that is and what small businesses might be able to do in order to capitalize on some of the talent that's unhappy in the traditional sense but might enjoy working with us?
Well, Donna Maria, one of the things that a lot of folks miss in this whole discussion is that large businesses and sometimes through their own fault, sometimes through circumstance of financial downturns, etc., have indicated to the people who work for them that by and large they're not really important, that the company can't afford to care about them, that they are interchangeable parts, and therefore they can be cast aside at any time in favor of saving a few dollars here and there. Where small businesses can take a huge leap forward is the opportunity of the work environment small businesses can provide. Almost, if it's within the philosophical approach of the leadership, if it's within the way the leaders choose a work team, whether it's virtual, whether it's on-site, whether it's arm's length, whatever it is, the way we choose a work team, you can create a high measure of camaraderie in a workplace. And by camaraderie, I mean people generally like to be with each other, like to engage with each other, like to produce together, like the results they produce, and like the way management treats them in such a way that it's not a job, it's like going to your club. And a lot of people laugh when I say this type of thing, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, people my age, and I have to tell you that, you know, I'm a war baby, I'm not even a boomer. People my age grew up with a large extended family living around us in our community. Today, most people, except for their relatives that live under the same roof, live 100 or more miles away from their closest blood relative.
Mm-hmm.
So the workplace has sort of migrated to be the nuclear family we used to know in this country. And so people have a lot more social interaction, and I don't mean partying and birthday parties and things like that, but social interaction, people-to-people interaction in the workplace they ever have before. If it's a highly valuable interaction, people want to stay there. You don't leave the people you, quote, love, right? You
right.
Like being around them, you're going to work harder. So with small companies, the ability to apply an extended family atmosphere where you work together, you laugh together, you cry together, you suffer together, you gain together, you succeed together, is a huge opportunity. Now, the reality is you still have to be able to pay people a living wage,
right,
and provide them for the necessities because, you know, when push comes to shove, they're going to have to cave in to be able to take care of their own families in the best way possible. But for the most part, this is a doable thing. And you can pick and choose the best people who are looking for that kind of atmosphere. So I think small companies have a unique opportunity in this particular recessional environment.
So it sounds like looking forward to hiring your first couple of people, you really do need to set aside quite a substantial amount of time to maximize the chances that you'll choose the right one.
Oh, boy, you've hit on something. You know, it's amazing how many, many people don't have time to really search and hire, but we always are able to take the time and figure out how to get rid of somebody that was a mistake. I mean, if you just think about that statement I just made, it really sounds stupid, doesn't it? I mean, to be able to say, well, I really didn't have time to do a good job hiring, but, man, I'm going to take all the time I can, make sure I can get rid of this person and not suffer any, you know, negative consequences. If you did it the opposite end, you wouldn't have to, you know, to me, Don Marie, it's common sense not applied very often and so easily applied well.
That's a really, really good point. So we really do need to be prepared to set aside the time to, first of all, figure out what we want.
Yes.
And be able to identify that in people. And especially if they're going to be virtual, you're going to be talking to them on the phone.
Right.
You're never going to see them come into your office 9 times out of 10.
Correct.
So what are some of your tips on creating that kind of camaraderie? Let's just say you do have two virtual people that are helping you with your business doing different but complementary tasks. Can you think of some things that can be done to create that kind of camaraderie across the miles? I mean, do you maybe have your meetings via a video conference or something where the three of you can be together to create that kind of relationship that you're talking about, that club-like atmosphere a little bit?
Well, I think video conferencing is good. Not all employers have the facilities to do that. I think there are three or four things to create camaraderie that really, really help. Number one, and most important, indicate that the person is important. And you do that by indicating that you want to know what is important to them. And within the realm of the possibilities and probabilities that you can provide, you as the employer will try to provide for those important things to them as much as you can.
Okay.
Number two.
Okay.
Oh, you were going to ask a question.
No, I'm soaking all of it in. I'm looking for the next example.
All right. Number two. Once that is established, indicate through your actions, not your words, through your actions, that their ideas, their results, their participation is critically important to the success of your business. So indicate that they are valuable not only because of their skill, but because you need them to propel this company forward.
Okay.
All right.
Uh-huh. That's good. Those are good things. So let me ask you this, another interesting thing I've been reading about. I can't remember whose blog it was. It was someone in the human resources arena, though, who was talking about some people who have really developed their own brands, their own separate businesses as a result of doing such a good job on their traditional job. That they essentially did such a good job that they, you know, sort of created an entirely new career for themselves and then moved on. Have you experienced that or watched that happen over the last?
I have, and you know, I find it curious. With a few notable exceptions across my years in business, people who leave an organization having created their own quote brand, leave those organizations because the organization has failed to satisfy those needs that the individual has.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is a corporation, let's use corporations rather than small businesses for a moment, a corporation makes an offer to a brilliant scientist, okay? And offers him or her a great deal of money, a title, and then within the first 15 days that the person is on site, the corporation clamps down, lays down all the rules, tells them all about non-disclosures and non-competes, and basically puts a noose around this brilliant person's neck about how far they can spread their wings.
Mm-hmm.
In doing so, they restrict the creativity that this person wants to bring. Remember I said people want to make a contribution? That's
mm-hmm.
natural. It gets restricted. So what the person does is they go into underground mode, and while they're doing their jobs, and because they're brilliant, they're doing great jobs, while they're doing their jobs, they're doing this little thing on the side that is really sort of keeps their blood pumping.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets developed, they leave because the corporation has declared early on that they're not really interested except what you can produce for me right now. And the person says, well, you know, you haven't left me any choice. I'm going to go. You know, and I find that very, very, I find it disheartening that we do that to people. Instead of bringing them in, giving them very, very few tight rules and lots of guidance and guidelines to sort of let them fly, you know, within a broad set of boundaries so they can produce all that they can and be willing to do. And I think that's an unfortunate thing. Now, it's good for the individual who becomes entrepreneurs, and I'm not saying that entrepreneurial spirit is a bad thing or that, you know, that people won't become entrepreneurs regardless of how great the working environment is, but But I will tell you that I've seen it over and over and over again where people leave because they don't think they have a choice, you know.
Right, right. So, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about this sort of non-compete kind of issue. I'd like your comments on situations where pretty tight restrictions might be necessary. I'll give you an example. Many of our listeners today are cosmetics manufacturers or candle
right.
manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Certain recipes and
right.
they have certain, and not really just the recipes, but some of the processes that are used to be efficient in manufacturing. They must share with their employees or their contractors who are helping them to manufacture products, and non-competes are necessary. So
mm-hmm.
what are your tips for walking that line? I mean, obviously, I don't think you're going to say a non-compete is not ever necessary in situations like that, but what are some of your tips for walking that line between protecting your intellectual property and your processes and encouraging people to be creative and spread their wings as you just described?
Well, I think there, my opinion, and this is, again, my opinion, is there is almost a fine line law written in all these things that say anything that you create while using my facilities, my manufacturing or my mm-hmm. chemicals or whatever that might be belongs to me.
Right.
All right? And there's no gain sharing involved.
Mm-hmm.
So the tendency for somebody who may feel that is grossly unfair to sort of cross the line against the non-compete or against the non-disclosure or against trade secrets rule
right.
or, you know, is exacerbated by the fact that, you know, yes, you gave me you put the chemicals in the room and you provided the air conditioning in the office, but I did the work, and yes, you own it, but, you know, at least, you know, give me sort of a piece, either both in recognition and in some kind of a tangible, give me a piece, an opportunity to gain share. And companies don't do that very well. And if, you know, and if, for example, if you're going to make $1 million on a project that I worked on or that you worked on, and the bonus is, you know, $12,000 for good work, one of three things is going to happen. You're going to get a lot less quality work because of the value proposition isn't good, or you're going to get a little bit of the opportunity for someone to cross the line. So I think non-competes are important. I think non-disclosures are important. I think the whole thing about trade secrets and processes are important because they belong to the organization. But when somebody comes up with something new and different, okay, it should be treated more like the patent office treats things. You know, a patent that's been changed just enough is a new patent.
Right, right. Those are such excellent points. I know your book points out how important it is to recognize results, and you draw a difference between that and efforts, which I think...
Oh, boy, yes, I do, and I feel so strongly about that. Companies make that mistake all the time.
I could tell that. So when we come back in our last segment, we're going to explore that and talk a little bit more about gain sharing. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking with David Russo, author of 17 Rules Successful Companies Use to Attract and Keep Top Talent. David, one of the things your book talks about is the difference between recognizing effort and recognizing results. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, and thanks for asking. One of the mistakes many, many people in leadership and management roles make is that they confuse effort with contribution. And what I mean by that is that somebody can be working very, very hard, but if the results of what they do is minimized by the effect on the business, minimized by the time it takes to achieve the results, or minimized by any agitation their activity causes to maybe other people and interrupts their productivity, that effort should not be rewarded in the same way as someone who provides a major contribution to the results that the firm is trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And too often, employers look at the smoke and the wheels spinning and interpret that as a contribution, and it's not.
Right, right. Good point.
And
so that requires you as the employer or you as a business leader to know exactly what you consider to be a contribution as opposed to just somebody trying really hard.
Absolutely, Donna Maria. But as importantly as that is you can't sit in one's office and see results come across one's desk. You need to be out in touch, whether it's virtually in touch, physically in touch, vocally, orally in touch with the people, checking on what they're doing and how it's going so that you have a gut feel for what's going on. You know, a long time ago, a guy named Tom Peters wrote a book called In Search of Excellence. And in his book, he said the best kind of management is the management by walking around. Because, number one, people know you're interested. Number two, people know you're paying attention. And number three, if people want to perform, they're going to sing and dance for you because they know you care. And that's how you get in touch with results versus effort. And I think it's important that management, small or large company, technical or non-technical, understand that results are what counts, not effort.
Right. Good point. And you know, it makes me think about something, actually going back to our last segment when we were talking about keeping people motivated and sort of creating the atmosphere where you walk the balance between, you know, protecting your business secrets or your trade practices or whatever, and also encouraging the people that work with you to expand and be as productive as they possibly can. I'd like to ask you, you know, for some tips on how a person would manage a situation similar to this. Of course, we're talking a lot about small businesses who oftentimes use virtual assistants a lot to do a lot of the social media type maintenance and upkeep that their business requires.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that a friend of mine not too long ago shared with me was, you know, she was really paying a pretty good rate to a person, an hourly rate, to do some basic, you know, not rocket science kind of social media maintenance, you know, to help her marketing efforts.
Right.
And what she noticed was that the person seemed to be doing a lot more of her own social media marketing to try and get more people in her queue, like my friend, and, you know, the work sort of started to seem to slip. And I guess there's an obvious answer there, that obviously can't continue. But I would like your thoughts on that, because in today's work economy, David, it seems to me that there are far more chances that things like that will happen because people seem to be so, I don't know if panicked is the right word, but certainly wanting to keep as many options open as possible.
True enough. Well, one of the things about dealing with folks who have a skill set and a business that sort of is a vendor to your business, so to speak, is that the parameters of the relationship, and we said this early on in the discussion, Donna Maria, that the parameters of the relationship have to be squared out at the outset. Because sometimes it is because there's such a crossover in the technology, the applications of the technology, that it is virtually impossible for someone who is in their own business, which shares technology platform with the business they're doing for you, not to slide back and forth because they come up with an idea for you that applies to what they're doing, and to basically capture it for their own use.
The technology crossing back and forth so that there is a significant amount of overlap oftentimes.
Right, right. You know, in my consulting agreements with my clients, I always say that unless my client and I agree that the things I do for them belongs to them, and the things that I bring to that party, so to speak, continue to belong to me, even if it affects what I do for them. Unless that's all clear, we have a problem.
Right.
Because from time to time, I'm going to do work for a client that is going to use stuff I've spent 40 years learning.
Right.
And from time to time in my work for a client, I'm going to come up with something new that I learned by working with that client.
And one of the reasons they want you is because you have that 40 years of experience.
But they have the right to say, if you come up with something new, it belongs to me, as long as I agree with that in writing. And I have the right to say, anything I bring to this relationship belongs to me, even if I apply it to what I do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be laid out early on. If it's laid out early on, Donna Maria, there should be no problems, because you can always look at the result, whatever is being done in the situation you describe, and say, you know, this sort of crosses the line. Let's get this clarified. And then the relationship can continue, because many times, particularly in technology, people don't even realize they're crossing the line because this stuff morphs. You know, as you said early on, you know, it's sort of all there together, and prying it apart for yours, mine, and ours can be difficult after the fact.
Good point. I guess we certainly can't give all the answers here, but I love how you describe that. As you said, we have a problem, which is a really good way to flag people that, you know, it's a good idea to sort of pause.
And Donna Maria, I will tell you this, the worst way to resolve a problem is to create a defensive conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be accusatory and immediately get a person's defenses up where you put them where they have to defend is the beginning of a downward spiral in the relationship that could spill. I mean, it could spill out to legal issues, but it could spill out to the fact that, you know, your organization is no longer getting the best of this person's effort because the trust is broken.
David, what are some of the best ways that a small business owner, a very small business owner, can reward contribution and results on a budget?
I think gain sharing is one of the best.
Okay.
Because, you know, pardon me?
What do you mean by gain sharing?
Well, it requires the willingness of the small business owner to basically put out a target for financial success, and then whatever parameters he or she uses to show gains over year over year, month over month, to give the people who participate in the gain a piece of that action, tangible, intangible. I mean, I've seen everything from monthly bonuses, from cash profit sharing, phantom stock. I've seen all sorts of different things that work where the individual, whether it's a vendor, a virtual employee, an employee, even a contract employee, where they are engaged in the process of making the organization successful because they will share in the results over and above the normal expectation of growth, development, profitability, or whatever it might be. For example, Donna Maria, you know, you say, you know, as in my company has been dollar over dollar, 6% net profit increase year after year. I'd like to be 10%. If we make that 4%, those of you who participated in that will get a piece of that 4%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's a huge incentive for people to, because, you know, there's something out there for them. And if they don't make it, if it's not there, the expectation is, well, we didn't make it, it's not there.
Right.
You know, it's straightforward. It's, you know, and of course, I've given you a real, you know, quick and dirty look at the whole concept, but the idea is people want to participate. And you allowing them to participate tells them three things about you and three things about themselves. About you, it tells them that you're open, honest, and fair.
Mm-hmm.
About you, it tells them you really want them to be a part of this process. And about you, it tells them that you are not in it for you, you're in it for the organization. About them, it tells them that they're important, that they're expected to perform, and they are capable of moving your organization forward. Those six things together make for, back to my one of my original discussions, high levels of camaraderie in an organization.
Those are excellent points. I'm going to make sure that I make a really good note of those when our audio comes out and people are able to download this and listen to it later. David, one of the things your book says is that we should treat employees as volunteers. What do you mean by that?
Well, you see, every morning, let me just go back to, we all went to high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
The worst night of my life from the ages of 13 to 17 was Sunday night, because I didn't like high school, and I would go to bed at night, not with nausea, but certainly with some pangs about getting up in the next morning and going to school, because I didn't really care to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
You want your employees to come to work with joy, because if they feel they are there, not because they have to be, not because they need to be, because they want to be, that's a key. And people who volunteer want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteers aren't conscripted. Volunteers show up because they are going to be doing something important for a cause that's important with people they care about, and hopefully producing a result that they can respect and will be respected. Well, that's how you want to treat your people. You want to treat your people like they're doing something important, it's worth doing for an organization they can respect, and the results are going to be respectable and respected.
Good point. I can remember feeling the same way on Sunday nights, David. I can relate to that.
So by treating your employees as volunteers, what you do is, you know, you realize that they do have options. Even though some of your employees, small business, large business, don't have many options, they do have options. They don't have to come. You know, no one's going to come and drag them out of their beds and bring them to work.
Right.
So they don't have to be there. So the fact that they want to be there is a win. The fact that they want to be there and working for you is a second win. The fact that they want to be there working for you and doing good work is a third win. And the fact that they're proud of the relationship is a fourth win. If you treat them like volunteers, the chances are more often that they will behave like that and get what you want. Now, I have to say this, Donna Maria. It doesn't mean you make your place of work a country club. It's
right.
All about adult behavior. It's all about serious work. But Maria Montessori was a teacher who said that work is fun and play is fun. We just have to remember they're different kinds of fun.
Different kinds of fun. That's a really good point to remember. On that note, we're going to conclude it today. David Russo, author of 17 Rules, Successful Companies Use to Attract and Keep Top Talent. David, I know we can get your book at bookstores and Amazon.com, of course. What website can we go to, David, to learn more about you?
It's www.eno-one.com. My organization is Eno River Associates, and it's a small boutique consulting firm, and I just hang out there.
Great. So check it out, everyone, at eno-one.com and learn more about David. And maybe he can offer some consulting services to help your small business or someone else's small business that you know. Next week, coming up on Indie Business Radio on March the 15th, I've got Sean Raw, or actually I said that backwards. It's Ron Shaw, author of Social Networking for Business, Choosing the Right Tools and Resources to Fit Your Needs. I'll see you here next week for that show. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.